This is Cab Class with Gary, Mark and Sean. And we're asking, are you a classy cabbie or a dirty old dog? If you think you're a classy cabbie, maybe you have a story to tell and you don't mind us digging out your past, then get in touch by emailing us at newcabclass@gmail.com. Gotta love it. That's Cab Class with Gary, Mark and Sean.
Hello everyone and welcome back to the brand new podcast for the taxi trade, Cab Class, the show where we interview your favourite taxi drivers and find out if they're classy cabbies or dirty dogs. Hello everyone, thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to the London Taxi Radio YouTube channel so you can get all the latest videos pumped out to you without having to faff around looking for them. Right, you know me, I'm Gary, one of your hosts. My mate next to me is Chelsea Mark. How are you, mate?
Hello, mate. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks.
We've
nice to see you.
We've got another season.
No, he booked us for another season. I can't believe it. I'm still waiting for the check.
Yeah, well, I've had a deal with him. We've upped the dope.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we've upped the money.
It's funny how you mentioned that.
He knows he's not the winner.
Well, I tell you what, we've got an up one today, mate.
Oh, we've got a guest and a half here. We've had some great guests. We've had footballers, actors, truckers,
yeah,
we've had all sorts.
Boxers,
well,
yeah.
We've got a man here that's probably done 9 jobs probably in the last month. So we've got a real cracker.
Well, that ain't off Waterloo.
No, that's a good call.
Right, we don't want to, normally we have our little chat, but we've got so much to get through today. We're
going
to move straight on. Let's talk to our other mate, Sean Paul Day. How are you, mate?
I'm great. My sap is rising.
I can imagine that.
I think it's the spring.
It
dawning,
must be,
but
yeah.
It might be the guest.
It could be.
I don't know. But
he's
got his biceps out.
Let me quickly just tell you what we're looking at, a cut of fillet steak here.
Oh.
It is a specimen.
I'm going to be honest here, right? I do a lot of prep for these work, for these jobs, even though you probably don't realise that. And today I've done 50 press ups because I knew what was coming. When we had Jerry the other week,
yeah,
I had a donut as prep.
That's right.
The prep today.
To get into the mindset.
Yeah. The prep today was 50
Mate,
press
honestly,
ups.
Honestly, you can't see him, but he is a professional. He's a bodybuilder and the man takes it serious. And you can tell,
man,
just the look at him.
He's got muscly muscles.
Oh, yeah.
This is like honestly a spit and sawdust gym in this
Yeah.
Oh, it's unreal. But anyway, we're talking about him. Let's talk to him. I'll give you a bit about him. So he has been a green badge for 18 years. He's an ex-royal engineer, an ex-doorman, a film extra, an ex-topless waiter, a physical education instructor at both Belmarsh and Whitemore Prison. People, please give him an hand. It is George. Hello, mate.
Hello, mate. It's all right.
How are you? Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for inviting me over to the uncivilised side of the water.
Because you're a South Londoner.
I'm a South Londoner. Pronounce it right. Yeah, South Londoner.
So we know you didn't get the tube here today.
Well, no, we leave that to the North London boys because they don't like daylight. And looking at the people I know from North London, I can understand why.
Is this our first South Londoner?
I think he is.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I'm with you, mate.
Yeah.
I'm a South Londoner.
He would say we've got a better class of people, but I don't know.
Bring a better class to the show.
Mate, so have you got anyone as strong as this? Come on, bring a top man. I'm bringing a top man along.
Honestly, I am slightly intimidated.
Unbelievable.
I'm a big pussycat.
How hard is that t-shirt working?
Big pussycat.
If that button goes, I'm in trouble.
He'll have an eye out.
I'm here to help, I want to see him drop and give me 20 at the end.
Yeah, I'll do it.
So let's start with this stat. I would have done me 50. Let's start.
Go on.
Arsenal fan, yeah?
Arsenal fan, brought up over the road from Millwall.
So where did the, yes, that's why I asked.
It all went right, as my old man was from North London. So, you know, he took me away from the dark side, led me to the light. And from then, you know, I did used to go to Millwall. I call him my second club. Used to pop down the road to see him with
your
mates.
So you could walk to Millwall?
Walk to Millwall, but I used to travel all the way across London to watch the Arsenal.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I'm glad. At the time, I wasn't glad because it was a sapping time.
Yeah.
74, 75.
But you was a top
going
fan, weren't you? You was a steward over there?
I was a steward. I was on the closed circuit TV. If you looked at the corner flag at the clock end and that was where the police operation was. Yeah. I was in there.
That's when football violence was regular.
So I used to sort of watch the game from the nice warmth of that office. Whenever a goal was scored, wallop, you went on the fans, on the away fans.
Yeah. So what was the worst thing that happened with the Arsenal fans? You get a stern letter?
No, very good. And he's an Arsenal fan.
In
all seriousness, you would do a lot of operations where certain fans might be saying certain. They might be reported for saying racist stuff, homophobic stuff,
even back then.
And so what they would do is they would put a couple of plain clothes next to that seat.
Yeah,
mic them up and get me to put the camera on them. Catching that fan in the throes of shouting this, that, and the other.
Been a great job. I'd love to talk to you more about that because I find it fascinating. But we've got so much to get through.
But that's just one of my jobs.
So you're out of Peckham.
Peckham, yeah. Well, we're at the Peckham side of the Old Kent Road. So you cross the road from the gas. I was at the gasworks of the Old Kent Road. Cross the road, you're in Bermondsey.
About,
so I was on the
about where every cab driver turns his light off.
Yeah.
About there.
Yeah. Oh. Well, I sort of turn my light off around the King's Road, to be honest with you.
I don't want to pick any of them Chelsea fans.
No, they're Chelsea fans. Don't want to pick any of them.
I get a job at New Cross and I feel like I'm in an episode of Wacky Races.
You should have come over here today.
But it's always Dulwich. Whenever we get a fare to Peckham, it's Dulwich, mate, and then they get you want to cuddle them, and then you're going through Nunhead, and they go, hold on a minute.
It's like that for me. It's just like going home.
Well, I'm from Brixton. I'm probably one of the only cab drivers that bite people's hair not to go Brixton.
Yeah, that was rough when I was a kid.
Yeah. Well, you had a colour of eyes, you never.
Right. So, tell us a bit about your sort of pre cab life, please, George. Where did it start out?
Pre-cab life. I mean, I done left school at 16.
Yeah.
Never been out of work since. So, shop assistant, factory worker, window cleaner, minicab driver, labourer, traffic warden. I never really stopped around in jobs. If it wasn't, I didn't think it was. I got bored.
Yeah.
I weren't one of them people plot and just wait it out. I used to.
Is that another way? So you got sacked a lot.
Never got sacked. Unbelievably so.
Yeah.
With a gob like mine, I never got sacked. But I used to look at things and just think, nah, I'm on the movie, I've got to get out, get itchy feet. So I went from labour into telephonist. So when you used to phone 100 or 999, that was me. I was one of those picking it up. There was four blokes in Blackfriars Road in Colombo House. Four blokes with 200 women, and I was 20. Yeah, you can imagine. So it was a great time. That was a great time.
A life learning experience.
Yeah, yeah. I spent 18 months there. Then I went on to postman, joined the army.
Right.
Done a bit of time in the army. Won best recruit, best at PT.
Where was you stationed anywhere?
Just mainly in England. But I was in Camberley for my training. And that,
well, there's never been a war in Camberley, so you've done well there.
I don't know. Friday nights in Aldershot.
Oh, yeah.
Wear your desert boots.
I can imagine that.
Wear your desert boots, and they're not official desert boots until you've urinated on them.
Oh, well, okay.
They have to be urinated
on. But you know you've urinated, or you just have
the stains on them where you've messed on them. Otherwise, they're not official army desert boots.
So I've got a mate who was in Afghanistan. He messed up. He should have gone Camberley, yeah?
Should have gone Camberley, because that's where all the action was.
My brother-in-law was in the army, and he got stationed in Iron Appa. How about that?
You say Iron?
Yeah.
My dad was in Cyprus, and he was in the wages corps. Never picked a gun up in his life.
Now, but my old man was stopped in Cyprus, and then he went on to Egypt, or Egypt, as he called it.
How old are you, mate?
Egypt.
How old am I? I forget. 56, going towards 57.
Yeah. So what year would this have been, the army?
The army, 89. 88, 89, 91. So yeah, round about then.
Where did you
go? So Falklands was before then, wasn't it?
I got out just before the beginning of the Desert Storm 1.
Oh, the first event.
The first one.
Yeah.
So I got out
so
just
you
before
it,
then.
Yeah.
Basically, yeah. Dropped my rifle, ran.
Yeah, straight to Camberley.
And wrote to me mate who was on the front line who I went through training with, and for some reason I had a premonition. And this isn't a wind up. I had a premonition it was going to start on a certain date in January. I think it was the 17th.
No
and I just told, I wrote to him and in the day before computers, and I wrote to him, I said, keep your nut down. For some reason, I've had a dream. I said in premonition 7-8, and it did. It started on that day, and the silly sort of like Welshman, typical Welshman, he got caught behind enemy lines. He got away, but he got lost behind enemy lines and drove over his rifle. His claim to fame. But he then went on Desert Storm, and he really did tell me how pitiful it was. Like, you know,
oh, so I could imagine.
He said he'd done his nutting and he had to get out. So I'm glad I didn't.
Yeah,
I got married. So
yeah.
And then I went into a tougher regime, in my view, and he written as well, which was the prison service. So,
so you was a prison warden in where?
Officer, mate.
Sorry,
not a warden.
Sorry,
this isn't porridge.
So, right. Was you more Mr. Barraclough or Mr. Mackay?
I was both, and a good screw.
Yeah.
And if you can remember what a good screw is, girl, a good screw, because you're married. A good screw is both. Right. So you have to be malleable to the inmate. So it's no good walking around banging doors and being a sergeant major, because you will get your comeuppance. Yeah. You will meet someone who is tougher than you.
I imagine the army set you up good and proper.
Well, what the army did for me was I found that every job, I've always, as you might tell, I've got a body that likes to be thrashed. Mm. I've always trained from maybe about an 8-year-old kid, so I've always enjoyed the pain of training. And it's just one of those things I'm built with. And so I would get agitated at work, and I'm a bloke who feeds off respect. So if I didn't respect the boss, I generally couldn't crack with him. And so I would move on, and I got in a bit of bother at the post office. I had a tear up with someone. That was looking a bit iffy, where I was going to lose the job. And then my mum just turned me. My mum was ex-army, my dad was ex-army. So my mum just, in her Irish way, she went, "Why don't you join the army?" So I joined the army, and I found that they loved me. They sort of embraced it. They just went like the worst. And
my, it's almost one like of my channeling your aggression,
one of my corporals
yeah?
was a Chelsea fanatic, and I remember him turning to me and just saying, "You're an absolute loon." He says, "And we love it."
Yeah.
You know, and the worst you were, where you would think, you know, I'm going to get in a lot of bother for this, they would say, "No, that's great."
So you found your calling.
Yeah, I remember sitting there one day thinking, these people are mad. And they like me being mad.
Yeah.
You know, that's why, like, you know, we talk about football and think about cheats and things like that. They would encourage you to cheat. They would encourage that. Winning at all costs, it don't matter.
So that like what Sean was saying, that grounding was perfect to become a prisoner.
Well, I think the grounding came in my young life, being brought up in the streets of Peckham and the old Kent Road. And you take knocks and whatever. And I think that's the sort. And sport. I think sport, you learn how to win, you learn how to lose, and you learn how to mix with people.
I always say sport's the best education.
It really is. And then when I was captain of all my teams, so because I was gobby, and I was never one of them fellas who never gave in. I would never give in, and so that's what the army loved. They loved that in me. So I took that to the prison service. But in them days, not so much now, but in them days, you had screws who were teaching you at the college who were 33-year-old men. They'd been in 33 years, 25 years, 27 years. And they really imparted a lot of knowledge to you, real world knowledge, not on a book. They throw the books aside and say, "Right, that's that rubbish out of the way. Let me tell you the real world." And you sort of learnt that you might think you're tough. Let me tell you, there's always someone tougher out there.
Absolutely.
And if you're one of them bully screws, you are going to get your comeuppance eventually from the cons.
Yeah, but didn't you get annoyed that the prisoners have more cable TV channels than you do at home?
Not in my day. We had a saying in the prison service, right? And it was, "Happiness is door-shaped." So if they're behind their door, they're quiet.
I don't care.
It's just doing the... I used to keep... When you first start, you take the job home with you, and it's confrontational. You know that a couple of times a week, sometimes you're going to be rolling around the floor. You're going to have punches thrown at you. You're going to have this going and whatever. You're going to have to strip search people and whatever. It's all going to kick off, right, at any point. And so you take that. You do tend to take that stress home. And then an old screw said to me, and we were on our way out one day, and he just went, "Look, you come in at 7:30. They're banged up." He says, "You go home at 9:00 at night. They're banged up. What happens in between is nothing. Take no notice of it." He said, "Your job is to keep them here. And that's it." Yeah. He says, "So don't take it
simplify
home
it, yeah."
He says, "You're getting too involved in it." And so sort of, it's really, you've got to be a good actor.
When I worked in the print, we used to play football, and Belmarsh was a team in it. So we used to go and play.
Right. Okay.
So I played football twice in Belmarsh, which was the most intimidating thing I've ever done. But what it showed me was what wonderful facilities. They had an AstroTurf football pitch. They had a gym that was as good as any David Lloyd you go to. It was phenomenal. And considering, a bit like what Sean's saying, you know, they've got nice tellies and all that. You think, this is a prison.
Okay. But then, and I would say that this is, we're getting a bit political here, but this is the problem in Britain, in my view, and other prison officers would say the same. Britain has a problem with itself. Britain's always conflicting itself, where they can't. Britain can't decide whether it's a rehabilitator or it wants its pound of flesh. You can't, what do you want to do as a country? Whereas Norway and people like that, they've said, well, we're rehabilitators, right? America has said, no, we're not, we're hardcore. Right, because America sent, I remember when America sent a team of people over to view us in the HSU, when I worked in the high secure unit in Belmarsh, which was the most secure unit in Britain. And they came over to watch how we, because they said the level of violence in our high secure unit was way, way lower than America. So they couldn't believe we were playing pool with the cons, and we were playing table tennis, and we were interacting, playing cards, you know, or just sitting and chatting with them about everyday things. And they couldn't get over it, that we actually, because they actually said to us, you actually speak to them? We said, of course we speak to them. We're British, and that is our way. Yeah. We tend to be that way. So what do you want to do? I mean,
should they have a better gym than I've got?
But if you actually went to the gym,
I've done 50 press-ups. No, but if I could go in prison for having no TV license, then when I get into the cell, I've got 60 channels.
Okay, but then you go into the prison, right? You can't turn your own light off. You don't say whether your door's shut or open.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Right? You can't say, tonight I can go and, you can order a takeaway tonight. Right? Normally you go down a restaurant. But you can't, they can't.
No.
They can't do that. Childish things that, really, my kid can do that, but my 18-year-old daughter can phone up a takeaway tonight. A grown man in his 40s, sitting in prison tonight, I still ask an officer, can I please go out to a toilet or whatever?
And does Cat A get those type of facilities? You know, is it?
They do. They get facilities that they get it on a smaller scale because they're high risk. You've got Category A and then you've got high risk. I was with high risk, and they're higher than Category. They're higher than Category A. So
are they a risk to themselves?
Some are, but they wouldn't be in a high risk unit. They would be in the healthcare, or they'd be in the segregation unit where we could watch them properly, 15 minute
and
watches.
And that's what, 23 hour lockdown?
They would be, in the segregation unit.
Unless they're playing
unit,
football against us.
Yeah. In the segregation unit, but in the high risk unit, in the high secure unit where I was with IRA.
Where was this though?
Belmarsh.
Belmarsh. Yeah.
So I was with, I was the first officer in Belmarsh to volunteer to go in the high secure unit. Because they thought I was mad, because no one volunteered to go in the high secure unit. But I remember standing on, I think it was Houseport 4, and I was IC, in charge of my spur, which is in the wing. And I remember some con coming up to me, and he was off his nut on something, and complaining about, they've chewed me pillar and I'm going to kick off. and you're like, for the 20th time this morning, someone's had their pillar chewed by security, someone's surging their cell, because they're only allowed one pillar, and they're going to kick off. And you just think, I can't be bothered with these people anymore. It's just, I've had 2 years of it. So I went up and saw my governor, and I went, I want out. I said, I want to go where the action is, and I want to go HSU. And he went, you're mad, aren't you? Because we had all the top IRA in Britain, or in England. That were in the HSU. And so I said, no, I really want to go there. I want to have a bit of that. So he sorted it out, and I went over to the HSU.
George, what was that like?
I absolutely loved it. I really...
They were right then, you were mad.
I really loved it.
So what sort of characters was you dealing with here?
I was dealing... We had about two spurs, and a spur in the HSU had 12 cells. So we had about two spurs.
And a spur's a wing, sorry?
It's a spur. A spur is like it's like a wing. Got so it. 12 cells. So we had two of IRA, and then we had a spur of UDA, which is the Protestants.
So
can never move them at the same time, and it was all going off out the window, and we had less of them, right? I will say that. But then you had other characters. So you had the fellow who was in for killing the Pope's banker on Blackfriars Bridge, DiCarlo.
That was the umbrella job, was it?
No, they hung him from Blackfriars Bridge,
and banker, then they put the post banker,
stones in his pockets. That's and right. stuff, you know. And so
it was only when the tide went down, they see him hanging, didn't they?
That's it. Yeah. So we had him, and then we had and he was like, when he was at trial, the old Bill told us that any Italians who were in the cells with him were kissing his hand and all this.
Really?
Yeah, he was that high up in the mafia, really? In the Italian mafia. So we had him, little DiCarlo, and so you had a whole mixture. You had police murderers, and you had Steele, who was an Australian who'd killed 18 people, and you know, so you had a real mixture in there. And so I became then a sports and games officer in the unit, which was, I had to train to become one of them. This was on my course where I wanted to become, in the end, a physical education instructor. So the next step was obviously become a sports and games officer. So I could take the cons out in the afternoon in the yard, which was all caged in the HSU, you know, so no helicopters could land. And, you know, so you'd take them out and you'd say, right, you know, terrorists versus drug dealers, like this, you know.
That's
and they
brilliant.
Loved that. They loved it, you know. So you'd get, we're not terrorists. We're freedom fighters. You know.
All right. Drug dealers, yeah. Freedom fighters.
Yeah. And then you'd get the Colombians saying, we're not drug dealers. We're fitted up. You know. But having said that, you know, we had two Colombians, and it was one of the saddest stories because they were so nice, these two Colombian fellas who had come from Medellin, from the... what was it, the Pablo Escobar area. Yeah. So you get, and this is the thing with British prison officers, you get down, you sit, start listening to their story, and you think, what, how have you done, because you're such a nice person.
Yeah.
And one was a real religious fellow, his cell was like a shrine to me.
Yeah, they are over there, aren't they?
No, but then you say, he said, oh, well, you don't know how it works in Colombia. So, well, what happens then? Well, he said, I'm a chartered accountant. He says, I just got a knock on the door at 2 o'clock in the morning. Really? Yeah, because I've not got a police record. He said, so, they gave me six wraps or something of cocaine. He says, and they said, you will do it. They said, because you won't die if you don't do it. But every member of your family will be thrown from a building.
Good Lord.
He says, and you'll meet up with him at Heathrow. But what they'd done was, the cartels, they put two on a plane and they grass them up to the old bill deliberately. Because on that same plane, there's about four or five.
Yeah.
So the old bill were focusing on them, and the other four or five go through. So they give them up deliberately, and he ended up, he got down to 15 years, but he topped himself. So you do these sad
and
stories.
It puts things,
you know,
into perspective.
It really does, and you're dealing. You're not just going in as a turnkey. You're listening on a human level, and you've got to be careful to always keep at arm's length.
Yeah.
But
we've spoken before, because obviously I've spoken to you about, look, you're dealing with some of the worst of society. You're dealing with sex offenders, murderers. But you've got to stay professional.
Professional, and that is the key word. You have really got to be professional. But sometimes you're a human being.
Of course.
You know, you get angry. Sometimes you get caught up in it, and you have to. And that's where your colleagues come in, hopefully, and pull you away and just say, "Go and have 10 minutes." Yeah. You know, I've seen officers have to go for walks around the AstroTurf, crying their eyes out.
Yeah.
But what was the mentality in Belmarsh? I mean, was it more compassionate, or was it?
See, the prison service is this macho thing of, you're a care bear. That was the words, you know. If you showed any compassion, you've just got to be a strong character.
Yeah.
I mean, I was in nearly, 11 and a half years, coming up to 12, and I'd you can put prisoners on report, we called it nicking, and put them on report in front of the governor. Well, I nicked five in nearly 12 years, because there's more than one way to skin a cat. Yeah. I'd rather talk. You know, and let's have it out, you know, and if, you know, open the gate, you know, if you ask a con, all right, come on, get behind your door, and he mucks you around, just put it in your memory bank, and the next time he wants to get out, you just say, oh, remember that the other day when you mucked me about? Now, some officers would just put him on report.
Yeah.
But I never used to do that. I used to open so many doors and meet old mates.
What, from back in the manor?
Yeah, mass murderers. Honestly, yeah.
Mad,
I don't know, what are you doing here? Oh.
But you must be the only person I know that is on first name terms with sex offenders.
Yeah, but I like you three.
Brilliant.
That's a great reply. Oh, I like it.
But you're dealing with so many different characters, and I know one was Charles Bronson.
Charlie Bronson, yeah. I'm in one of his books, Respect and Reputation. There's a paragraph written by Kevin Lane. He was a guest writer in it, and he actually wrote about an episode where I I wouldn't side with some prison officers who were trying to make me falsify evidence against him. And so he wrote about that, and that's in Charlie Bronson's book. But I was it's a funny story. I was at home one night, my son was only about two or three, and I wasn't a PEI by now. I'm a sports and games officer, I'm working in the unit, and I get a phone call about 9 o'clock at night, and it's John Podmore, who was acting number one governor, best governor I ever worked for in all my years. And he phones me up and says, "Oh, hello, George, it's John Podmore, number one governor, Belmarsh." And first thing you think, I'm under investigation. What's that? I've done something wrong.
Yeah.
He says, we've had a long sit down with security. We've long sit down with this. And I think, the more he's talking, I'm thinking, what have I done? And we're backtracking your story,
Yeah.
He says, and you've been handpicked. He says, we want two teams of six to spend time with a high profile convict who's coming to Belmarsh. And straight away, I just went,
bet you was gutted when it was Jeffrey Archer.
We had him and all, and I'm going to go into him. All right. But so he said, it's Charlie Bronson.
So the biggest name in
the prison system. So
anyone don't know who he is, do a pen pick on him quick. He's been in prison for 40 years of his life.
Well, I'll tell you when I first met him. With Charlie Bronson, okay, was and so he picks it. So you can't unlock Charlie without six. Okay, so that's six and an SO, a senior officer, because you need a senior officer to direct.
So you're seven-handed.
You've got to have two teams. When you take an inmate to the floor, or you're trying to restrain them, you've got to have three. You've got to have one on each arm, one on the head, and then you've got to have someone who's overseeing it. So it's always got to be an SO. So you'd have to have two teams. So whenever you unlock Charlie, you had to have a minimum of seven. Okay, because it took, let's take it right, it took 10 to hold him down, really, but we'd have seven fit fellas, strong fellas, who would have to hold him down. Thankfully, during his time in Belmarsh, he never kicked off. He got close a few times, but we could calm him down. We knew how to press his buttons to calm him down. And that was the reason we were handpicked, because he only likes a certain type. Right. You have to be a geezer.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You have to be full on, a bit mental. You have to have a crazy edge to you, and you have to have a character. And if you haven't, he'll just start trembling, start walking up and down, and thankfully he used to say to me, "Get him off, George, get him out, I'll kill him," like that. And so we'd say, "Can you leave the spur, please, sir?"
Is this another inmate, or is this one of the guys?
It could be someone like a chaplain, or someone from like on the offices or something like that. Someone a do-gooder, like, you know,
so we would
the Howard League for Penal Reform. They'd turn up and they'd say something that would wind him up. And there was no
He hated weakness, or
he couldn't women, children, you could leave him with all day.
Yeah.
Right? All day. Wouldn't hurt him. Men, he'd crush you. He had to be the alpha male.
Got ya.
If you were, and you had to let him be the alpha male. But now and again, you used to have to come up against him and take him on. Playfully.
Yeah.
And he loved it. He really, really loved it. So there's a couple of stories I'll tell you. But the first time I met him, they took me into the yard, and he was doing, as he used to do, thousands of sit-ups in the morning with a medicine ball, with my mate, Mickey Regan. And so he says to me, they said, "Oh, this is George, he's a new officer, he's one of the new, what's called as Charlie's Angels." He says, "One of the new form of new Charlie's Angels." So I was told by the governor, "You go in for the next so-and-so months, 4 or 5 months, Charlie's with us, you don't answer to anyone but me," the governor said. "You don't wear uniform, you go in and you wear him out. That's your job. Circuits, weights room, exercise, games in the yard, wear him out. And the more you wear him out, the less he's going to fight. Keep him occupied." So that was our job, right? So I'd go in, and the first time I shook his hand, "Where are you from then, George?" So I pick him. So I say, "Out Londoner." And he loves Londoners.
Yeah.
Loves Londoners, right? He's not even from London.
No, he's from Luton, isn't he?
From Luton, yeah. From Bedfordshire. But he loves Londoners, loves Cockneys. So, good Cockney boy, look. Oh, yeah. So, who do you support? Because he's a Spurs fan. So I said, "Arsenal." "Well, don't know about that. So, like, well, we're all London, Charlie, aren't we?" Yeah, I suppose so. Even though I hate Spurs, like, you know. So anyway, I just talked to him, and I just said to him, "So, Charlie, how did you originally get called in?" Like this. And so he said, "Now, this story." He said, and this is how he talks.
Yeah.
"Well, funny story, this, George. He says, I had this idea. I was going to do this shop." He says, "And I need a few quid." He says, "So I gets myself an RAF coat." And I've watched the film, and the film sort of sticks to it, but it misses out a lot of the story. "Gets myself an RAF coat. He says, and I put this RAF coat on, he says, I've got a sawn off in this RAF coat. He says, and this is typical Charlie, he says, I get to the high street and I think, I ain't got a getaway car. He says, I need a getaway car. So he says, and I see this black geezer sitting at the lights. He says, opens the door, I say, right, drive. He says, gets out, I think it was to the shop or wherever he's going. So he says, right, see them two geezers over there? This black geezer, he says, he's an office worker.
So he just pulled this car out of the street?
He's on his way to laundrette. Right, so he says, right, see them two geezers standing over there by the lights? He said, yeah, he says, they're part of my team and we've been watching you, he said, for weeks. He says, and we know where you live. All lies. So he says, you drive off, we'll come and shoot you and your family. Like this.
Oh,
so
no.
Geezer's like, his foot's shaking on the pedal.
Yeah.
So he says, right, he goes in. He says, I goes in. I think it's about $4,000 or something. He says, okay, $4,000. Jumps out, right, drive, drive, drive. Like this. Geezer's not a getaway driver, is he? So he gets caught down the road. Gets nicked. And Charlie said, no, no, he's part of it, he says to the old Bill. I met him in a pub. Like this. Right?
Yeah.
So Charlie's telling me this. So said, now, you can't laugh. If you laugh at Charlie, that's where the skill comes in. So that's what we used to call in the prison service, jail craft. Right? You've got to be able to be an actor. You can't.
Yeah.
Inside, I'm roaring with laughter.
Yeah.
But outside, you can't show that. So I'm like, yeah, oh, yeah, well, right, yeah, go on, Charlie. So he said, yeah, so 6 months down the line, I said, well, I better tell the old Bill we weren't part of it then. So he says, so I told him. He says, nah, it's only a joke. He weren't really part of it. They don't believe me, George. Like that. He says, they won't believe me. So he says, so what I does is, he says, I go to court and I smuggled. He says, I bottled. And he bottled me stuff up his rear end. He says, I bottled some boot polish and a bit of cellophane. He said, and I stood in the dock, he says, and I started smearing boot polish all over my face. He says, and the judge says, what's the commotion here? What's this commotion? What's going on? He said, I told him, this is an injustice. He says, it's racism. He said, that man, I've told the police, he's nothing to do with it. He's done 18 months of remand by now in Brixton.
Oh, no.
Lost his job and everything. This colour fella, this black fella.
And his cars.
Lost everything.
Yeah.
Right? Apparently his missus left him and all that, right?
Oh, no.
Charlie says to me, he says, right, adjourns the case. He orders an immediate investigation. He says, and I got him off. Right, I went, did you, Charlie? He went, yeah. He says, do you know what, George? To this day, he's never thanked me.
That's superb. That's superb.
So, yeah, now, there you go. You're all laughing. But you can't laugh.
No,
I went,
no,
so I've gone, you're having a laugh at me,
Charlie. Story.
How can he not thank you? What you've done with him?
What,
and so that's what you said.
Mug.
So that's what you're dealing with Charlie. And so you'd sit. I mean, I sat down. I'm not a great fan of Tom Hardy. I'll be honest with you. I don't think he's a great actor. But I thought, oh, I'll watch Bronson. And
you done all right?
It was like being in a room with him.
No,
really.
Because he spent a lot of time.
I watched it the other day because I knew I was going to do this.
It was like being in a room.
And in that he gets attacked a lot, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Doesn't he? So is that a little bit?
Well, you used to sit there with him, and a common thing was you'd sit. You'd do your workout, so I'd take Charlie. It was me and Charlie. I've got a photo in my phone, like, but used to take Charlie for circuits. I'd have to design them, and they had to be as crazy as you could make them. Like side sit-ups off of old tables with medicine balls, and you couldn't do a normal sit-up. You had to make faces.
Not like 50 press-ups like I've done.
No, this is mad, right? So it was all round the cells. Me and him would do circuits together, and there'd be two or three of us doing circuits with him, and I had to design them, like I say. And then you'd finish your circuit and he'd get his tea. He'd have his shower, get his tea. We'd all have a mug of tea, but Charlie would have a jug of tea. He's the alpha in the room. And so you'd sit there and you'd just pass conversation about his past and some of the mad things he's done, you know. So he says, right, and he's telling me about one of the cut of stories. He says, when he was in Broadmoor, he says, and I sat there one day, George, and I thought, I was bored. He said, you know what? I want to make my dick bigger. Like that. So we're all six of us sitting around this table.
We all had that fault.
Oh, right, Charlie. Yeah. So what I've done was
I
tied a PP9 battery to my old Bill.
That's one of
the big square ones.
Oh,
well, they hit. That's what the common weapon of. It's a weapon in prison. The PP9. They use them in socks.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So they're PP9. Yeah, that was what it was called. So I tied a PP9 battery to me old Bill for 3 months. He said, pulled it out of its socket. I had to have an operation. He said,
"Jesus Christ!"
So this is your normal day at work. So you're going home and your wife's like, Did that work? yeah, Charlie told me about his PP9 battery tied to his thing. Like,
can you turn it off when you walk out the door?
Sam, you don't want to because it's
the battery.
Sam, you don't want to because
Mark's had a copy.
That's funny. That's funny. They're funny stories. You don't mind them,
do you? They're brilliant.
Do you know what I mean?
What's about? Sorry, Dorian.
Go on.
What's the one you did tell me before about when he had the terrorist tickling his feet?
Oh, that was I'd moved on now. I was in Whitemore, and he took. I don't know if you remember it. There was some Afghanistan terrorists, and they took a plane. They took a plane at standstill.
Planes that are coming in, their hostage planes land at Stansted,
right?
Because they look out the window and say, oh, can we go back? That's a true story.
Well, we got him in Belmarsh in the healthcare unit, and Charlie, in his ways, he gets around the staff and he got into the room with them, and that's it. Once he's in the room with them,
does he despise all the other, like that? Is he got a scowl of whom he respects?
Right, on that plane would have been women and children,
yeah, right. And in his book, that's another,
and that's it. Okay, he used to walk up to the IRA who were waiting to go on exercise, and the IRA, George, I say, yeah, I just want to go over and say something. He's like, don't start. Please don't start, Charlie. Go, I just want to say something. So he'd shuffle over because we had like handcuffs. He'd go, you baby killers, like that to him, and they just, don't start, Charlie. Don't start. We don't want to have any trouble.
Really?
And they back down on him, because.
And I know, I don't imagine they back down from a lot of people.
They don't back down from many people.
No.
So George, he's done, get this right, 40 years in prison, all because of that one case, nothing else, but obviously he's just staying in prison, yeah?
He keeps taking hostages. Yeah.
In prison?
In prison. He's always taking hostages.
So what was the one with it? He got hold of his
he made him tickle his feet. He likes his feet tickled.
So he kidnapped him.
He kidnapped him, and he's got these geezers who are from Afghanistan, can't talk English, and they've got this crazy, like, jailbird, who's the most famous jailbird in Britain. He's getting them to tickle his feet.
So he's barricaded the door.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they're looking, and the squirrels are looking through the
and they're laughing, probably laughing most of them.
You know, and he's got them.
Charlie won't kill. We won't kill him, but he'll give him a battery. He'll give him an all right hander.
Just maim.
Yeah, and the only thing they did get wrong in the film, or one of the things, was what he always asked for. He always asked for the same thing, which is an helicopter to Peru. I don't know how an helicopter's going to get to Peru. He asked for a blow-up doll and a steak dinner. They were his three demands. And that's, he always asked for the same thing.
But he did get married, didn't he?
He got married, yeah, and he became a Muslim. He tried to change his name while he was with us, because he heard that the real Charles Bronson had cried at his mum's funeral. So, men don't cry. Men don't cry. It's like this, you know. So he tried to change his name to Clint Eastwood. and our governor said, we ain't having that. We ain't having a Clint Eastwood in Belmarsh. That ain't happening.
Where did he end up? Salvador Garley?
Mickey Salvador. Because his name's Mickey Peterson.
Oh, right, yeah.
You know. But you can't say you're ever... You can, actually. I'm friends with some ex-cons. Yeah. But, you know, it was as close as it could get. Because I cracked on with him. You know, and it was with Charlie, it's not about liking you, it's about respecting you.
Got you.
But he'll never get out, will he?
He probably will when he contracts an incurable disease.
Yeah.
They'll do with him like they did with the great bank.
Well, he said something, I did read his book and he said something I found very profound. He said that...
George is mad.
George is madder than me. No, he said the first person to fight the system always dies trying. And it made a lot of sense. And what he's saying is he's fighting whatever he sees that he's fighting for, and he knows he's never going to win.
I think Charlie is just he loves the fame.
Yeah, oh, right.
You know, he always, in his younger days, he hooked up with very famous criminals. And so he likes the notoriety.
Yeah.
He loves that mystery. He loves that fear. There's always, I don't care how old he gets, there's always that fear that whenever he walks in a room, your eyes go straight on him.
How old is he now?
He's about 70, I mean. So he's you know, we had him at his he was really he could go. Yeah. It took 10 to hold him down. And you know, you used to tell him something, ask him, because the things he'd gone through, say, what's the toughest that you've ever been in, Charlie? So he said, oh, those Northerners, George. He said, Leeds and Durham. He said, they come in on a Saturday morning. He said, because their old woman wouldn't give them any, he says, and they'd be ten-handed. He says, and give me an hiding. You know, and the infamous thing was that half his moustache was in the drawer at Scrubs.
This is the screws, yeah.
The screws, yeah. You know, and that's really why Belmarsh did what they did, because it wasn't working. You can batter a dog and batter a dog, and all you have is an angry dog. It's just battered and angry, and it'll keep coming at you. Some dogs just won't have it. They'll keep fighting.
Yeah.
And so our system, and I know a lot of people used to say, oh, you know, chucking all that money at him. So what's cheaper then? Is it cheaper than to get on the roof and do £10 million worth of damage, which he's done twice at Broadmoor?
Yeah.
You know, because he will find a way. Because he's quite intelligent. He's a highly intelligent man. He's not an idiot. You know, and his artwork.
I mean, I've got single mates who can't get a bird. How does he get married in prison? Yeah. Can you explain to my mates who can't?
Quite easily, because they
love the
it's the mystery, the notoriety.
Well, I watched that Night Charlie Stalker. Bronson's Have wife. You seen that on Netflix, The Night Stalker? No. And this is the most evil, pervert, disgusting human being.
He
had crowds of women.
I imagine Charlie Bronson.
Not putting them two in the same bracket.
I imagine he gets loads of letters.
He does. From people who are quite big fans of him, fan clubs. You know, I mean, I've only got to put something on Instagram with my photo with him, you know, where there's six of us, all with black, we had black bin bag lights on our faces, pretending to be his little Charlie's Angels, you know, and he loved it. And now I put one on Instagram, I'll get more from that than anything else I put on Instagram, where people are so interested.
Does he get posts daily? Like, have you got a post box in his?
Yeah.
Has he got, like, and he goes,
bucketfuls.
That's mad.
Bucket full. From all over the world.
So my mate, really, who can't get a bird, needs to do a post office.
He needs to be crazy.
He needs to do a post office.
He needs to get bashed up by 10 prisoners.
He needs to grow a big moustache,
But I'll finish on this. Right? One day we used to take him out in the yard in the afternoon. He'd done his training, so in the afternoon we'd take him out for a little game or something. You could get him doing anything. So my mate was ex-para. He could get him, oh no, Charlie, let's go around the yard on our bellies and see how many stones we can collect on our fronts. And who gets the most stones wins.
And he'd have the win.
Oh, I'll have some of that. And he'd do that. So, but he'd do stuff like that. So we took him out one. There were six of us taking it out. We used to play this game called non-stop cricket. And it's like tip and run, you know. And I used to play a bit of cricket in my day. And my mate, Sean Rush, is behind him. And I stood there in this airlock. No keys, not allowed keys. You're waiting for the buzzer to go and the airlock opens. And I've got the cricket bat. And he's facing me, Charlie. And I went, I can't play this. And I threw the bat down. My mate's behind him and he's looking at me like, wow, he's shaking his head. No, don't wind him up, no, like this. And Charlie's gone, what's up, George? Someone upset you? Like that. I went, I don't want to play, Charlie. It's a waste of time. And he went, someone's upset you. If someone's upset you, George, I'll kill him. Tell me who's upset you. I went, Charlie, there's no point playing. I said, I am the dogs at this game. I'm going to wipe the floor with you. Like this. And it all went quiet. And he just stared at me. And I thought, oh God, what have I done? And he starts, when he's excited, he jumps from foot to foot. So he jumped, and he went, and this is what Charlie does, he goes, hoo-hoo, hoo-hoo, like this. He says, you know what you've done now, don't you? I went, what have I done, Charlie? He went, you've made it really interesting now. I really want to beat you. I love that, like that. And from then, he loved it. And so, of course, every time I smashed the ball or something, I was doing moonwalking and all this. And that's what he likes. He likes character. He don't like boring. He likes you taking him on and being a good sportsman and, you know, having a laugh with him. Like being a geezer. You walk away from the shift going, oh, blimey.
Every day I've got away from that.
Came home with all my limbs attached, you know. Christ, because he could rip me in a bit, like, you know.
So what made you leave that all behind?
I then became a PE instructor. Okay. So I trained, that's nearly a year's training away from the family. So I was qualified at 18 different sports as a coach. And so then I got posted to Whitemoor, did 2 years there.
Yeah.
And then thankfully, never living in the English countryside again, came back to London at Belmarsh again, my original home, but as a PE instructor. And one of the stories, I've told Mark this, is that this convinced me, because the prison used to send you on courses, and so I became the prison man, the go-to man for diet, because the prison sent me on a special diet training course and things like this. And so I'm about to go on leave, and I'm on Turkey. It's a funny story, this, and this convinced me that you can actually sell anything to anyone if you say enough believable guff, a bit like Donald Trump. If you say enough rubbish, people will believe it. And so this con came up to me one day. He went up to actually my mate Mickey, he was a con at the time, but he was a gym athlete, and he says, who's the screw to see if you want to lose weight? I'm out in 3 months, and I can't go out looking like this. So he says, oh, you want to speak to Mr. Shipton, George? Go and speak to him. He's the diet man. All right, says, all right. Gov, how do I lose this? I went, well, how much? So immediately, my sixth sense of humour just kicked in, because I'm going on leave on Monday. This is a Friday.
Yeah.
I'm going to Turkey. So he says, how do I lose it? So I said, how much do you want it? He went, oh, mate, I've got 3 months. I've got to get rid of this. I'm about stoning up overweight. I went, right, there's a new diet out. It's up to you if you want to try. He said, but it's going to go against every principle you've ever thought of. He went, I'm willing. Tell me. I went, it's called the jam diet. He went, you're having a laugh. And I went, look here. I said, that's the usual response I get. I said, think about it. I said, what is fat? I said, it's a resistance to the pH level. I said, your levels of pH and acidity, is you're too high in the pH level. I said, how do we rid...
Is that true?
No. So I said, how do we rid the pH level of its high resistance? Down. Of its high burning, high fat burning level? I said, we make ourselves go into positive acidic territory. I said, what is jam full of? He went, acid. I went, exactly. He said, how much do I eat?
You were saying this to him. I said,
right, yeah. And my mate Mickey, he's right, mate, I've been on it, it works, like this. He's a boxer, like, so he's gone, yeah, it works. So he says, how much do I eat? I went, right, obviously I can't tell you how much because you're in prison. I said, you can't measure your food. I said, you've got to chew it. I said, you've got to swap it. You've got to get as much jam as you can get your hands on. I said, and you've got to eat as much jam as possible. I said, morning, noon, night, the lot. I said, even when you wake up in the middle of the night, you're angry, get some jam down you. He went, and it'll work. I went, you're going to go into a tipping balance. I said, you're going to tip your body over into the acidic level. You will be burning fat at rest. You won't even have to exercise.
Oh my God.
He's like, oh mate, I'm on this. I'm having some of this. This is proper. I went, there you go. I said, try it. I said, I'm back in 2 weeks. Let me know how you get on. So he's got it in the changing room. Mickey's turned around and he's gone, what have you done? I went, I said, mate, I can't wait. I said, I'm going up to Turkey. I said, he went, he's on my wing. I'm going to keep an eye on him. So anyway, I goes up to Turkey. I forget all about it. I'm away with the family. Comes back. So I walks into the start room. And the gym orderly's there, like, he's a prisoner, like, but he's gone, George, that con. I went, what? He went, he's on my wing, he's been chewing jam.
Would they get the little sachets?
Yeah, little sachets, and you can buy it at the canteen, he's been buying it.
He's
been swapping it for burn. He said, he's not going to give up smoking, he said, all he does is eat jam. He said, he's been eating jam by the bucket load. I went, I said, he actually done it. He went, state of him, you want to wait and see him? I went, no, really? He went, he said, he's coming down this morning. So he's come down, hasn't he? So I won't swear, like, but he's come in and he's, I can hear him coming down the changing room. I'm in the middle there in the staff room. Where is he? Where's that screw? So I stand there. And he comes walking in the office. Look at me! I went, what? He went, look at the state of me! He's covered in zits. He's covered in zits. He's got zits all over his face. He said, I'm pouring a stone in 2 weeks. He said, all I've been doing is eating jam. He said, look at the state of me. It looks like Violet Beauregard. I went, you mug. I said, how could you fall for eating jam and losing weight? And even he just stood there and went, I'm such a donut, and I. How have I done that?
I've just got this image of all these little packets of jam.
All around the cell. And my mate now, to this day, he's on Facebook with me, Mickey. He won't mind me mentioning Mickey Guilford. He's a lovely fellow, boxing trainer. And even now, he mentions, remember the jam diet, George? I'll never forget that.
Oh,
the jam diet.
Him over proper.
Oh, mate.
I think we're going to have to mention something about cab driving.
Oh, no,
no, there is another episode or two here without a shadow of a doubt.
My face is hurting.
This is brilliant. Brilliant stories.
It's been brilliant. Yeah, we have got.
So, where did your knowledge come in then? Come on, let's just do it.
So, yeah, I remember things. People often say you don't leave the prison service because of the inmates. You leave the prison service because of the management. I don't know anyone who's left the prison service because of inmates. You leave because of management. And so the management structure changed. We started getting accelerated, promoted people. So they were coming from university, and within 18 months they were running wings. Yeah. Whereas I was used to fellas who had been 25 years in, had experience, would back you up. Like, you could say, me kid's ill. Like, and they go, where you go then? Go home. And you had a boss. Bosses like that would look after you. And they started in sacking staff for the smallest of things
and become a bureaucracy.
Yeah, you started thinking, this could be me. And
so hanging out jam.
See, the job could be a laugh if you clapped with inmates, you know, that's what you did. And they got involved. They should have kept their oar out and let us run the prison.
So you then left, or?
No, I didn't leave. I spoke to a mate who was on a drink in Blackheath, and he was a cab driver, and I told him, it's really looking dodgy where I work, you know, and he just went, mate, do the knowledge. First of all, like we all did, we went, I don't think I can do it, I'm not capable.
Yeah, I want to be a cab driver, but I don't fancy that knowledge bit.
Yeah.
That's normally it.
And then I think you've got, I always say hate is a great energy, you know, that I use even in my training, mm-hmm. you know. You've got to hate where you are to do the knowledge.
You've got to detest.
That's a really good point.
To do the knowledge, you can't like where you are because you won't have enough energy to pass it.
You've got to be hungry. Isn't
you? So you've got to be hungry. So I started it, and like we all did, and you think I'm never going to do it. And then I remember sitting at South Kensington one day near the rank, and I thought, well, there ain't no brain surgeons here. Looking at them, I thought, I ain't got anything I ain't got.
Present company accepted.
Yeah. I'll do it. You know, I mean, if Chelsea fans can do it, why can't I?
Yeah.
You know, they're not the brightest bulbs in the box, are they? You know, they can't be. But anyway, so I'll shut him up before he starts.
You've just told Charles Bronson he can't play with a bat, and I'm the div.
I'm still living to tell the tale.
That's true.
So yeah, so I did that, and took me. It took me a month under 4 years to get through it. I didn't push. I was happy prodding away.
You bit the average.
I just, you know, because I was working at the same time as well. And we had a group of cab drivers in the prison who were up for £22 million drugs. And so they were Heathrow boys. And they were, so I used to do callovers in the gym. I used to call over with them. And I remember one of them saying, biggest bullshitters you'll ever meet, cab drivers. I went, really? He said, don't believe a word they say. He said, this is one of the cab drivers. I won't mention his name because he did actually get off. But he might be listening to this. So they might remember me.
Only my mum listens, so you'd be right.
Yeah, so that was my experience in the prison. And so I gave up training for a little while. You give up everything. Mm. So I gave up training. Mark gave up training 18 years ago and never started again.
Remember when he said he bought that CrossFit thing? And in 2 weeks he was hanging his clothes on them.
Hanging his jackets on them.
Yeah, yeah, right. Knife keeps stuff dry.
Yeah, still has one of those vibrating belts, you know, the women had in the 70s.
The only ones you can keep fit watching telly, that's it. Just turn it up.
But I remember getting the day I got me wreck, I cried.
Did you find the knowledge hard?
Hang on a second, the day you got your wreck, you cried.
I cried.
Yeah. Don't tell Charlie, for God's sake.
Don't tell Charlie.
Yeah.
And Mr. Groves, who was the examiner, he actually said, it's so refreshing to see it. It still means so much to somebody.
And it meant a lot to you?
Yeah, because I was in the point now in the prison where I'd hated, literally detested. I used to call, because you have to go into the prison, you have to go through airlocks and you take all your shoes off, you take your belt off. And I used to call it the soul extraction unit.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It was just so wearing you down. Your heart's not in the job anymore, you know. And I was just having wars with the management, so I just needed to get out and get away. And then when I finally got that thing of, you've done it.
Did you do them both for a while? Cab driving and...
That was the plan. And then I'm one of them people. Once I make my mind up, that's it, I'm off. I got my badge on the Wednesday. I put my notice in on the Thursday. Oh, and I went sick on a Friday. Yeah. And I never went back.
Yeah.
So you still got your mum's money?
Good man. Still got my mum's money, and I got sick time the last 2 weeks of
and
sick
you,
time.
And do you still enjoy it? Pandemic aside, do you still enjoy being a cab driver?
I enjoy the freedom it gives. I'm a positive. My glasses are full person.
Yeah.
So it gives me my time to go to the gym.
Mm-hmm. Which is your family aside is your main thing, isn't it? Training.
Training is my meditation.
Yeah.
It's my time. It's away from everything. Mm-hmm. So I'm away from all my headphones are on, and that's me for an hour and a half to 2 hours. And
but
I beast myself.
With all these jobs you've done.
Yeah.
Which we've not even touched on.
No, we've not touched on either, and that's for series four. But the one job I can see you being great at is a personal trainer in a gym.
I do personal training by accident. I didn't really want to get into it because it's frustrating with someone like me because I do push hard. I drive people hard. And if you haven't got the commitment, I don't really want to train you.
So you do a bit of the training now?
I had people come up to me, because I get people up, I'm well known in my gym, and so I would get people coming up saying, and they know I'm an ex-physical education instructor, and then you've got ex-cons in the gym who will go up to them and go, listen, they're the most highly trained PE staff in the country, which we were.
Yeah.
And so they said, forget all these YMCA PT tracks.
Yeah, do you say things like find your inner tiger, life goals?
No, we say free more, you pussy. Come on. Yeah. What's the matter with you?
Would you have let me stop at 50 press this morning, or would have I had to go to 55?
You would have took a 5 second breath and done 10 more.
Yeah. he didn't get to 50 press. Right,
so did he?
George, you
over the week.
You train at Crayford, yeah?
I train at Crayford Weights and Fitness.
And if someone did want to get in contact with you,
look at Gym Viking 1.
Yep.
As in GYM Viking 1.
Yeah.
On Instagram, they can contact me and see me instructing.
Yeah.
I'm instructing Jerry.
Now, if I was it's worth you seeing him just for his body.
Honestly, if I was going to get a personal training, it would be George. Yeah. And I'm not just saying it because he's here, but the man knows.
I've got a smaller shed than George.
Well, the thing is, when you do all this, and I did it for years as a PE instructor, is you park your ego at the door. That's the best thing you can always tell people.
Absolutely.
Just leave your ego at the door, you know, and because you have to understand that walking in a gym for some people is the most intimidating thing they'll do ever.
Yeah, you're right.
And it really does put them off. And so, especially my gym, because there's some big lads in there. But they're the friendliest people because we all started.
Yeah.
We didn't start big, you know. We didn't start big lumps. I tell clients, the minute you step through that door, you're winning, right? And you're a winner. You just got to step through the door and make that decision. No, I'll never laugh at anyone. I don't care. No. They could be 22 stone or whatever. They're in there and they're trying. That's all that matters to me. Well, they're fighting. But giving up is the thing I can't have. But you're in there fighting. I'll help everybody.
What is it Saturday? The weights are not prejudice, are they? If you put the time in, you'll get it back.
Consistency is the key to training.
Yeah.
Consistent, and people don't want to hear that.
No. So if you are interested in any, look, speak to George, Gym Viking 1 on Instagram, because he is the, honestly, what he don't know ain't worth knowing. But putting that aside, we're running out of time,
yep.
So we do a little thing at the end of each thing. It's a bit of each show. It's a bit of fun. It's not serious.
I'm a bit cautious about asking him any of these questions.
In case he loses his rank.
I'm a big pussycat, you know that.
if he's a dirty dog, right, we've got to get out of here fast.
But remember, I've got to speak about one person before.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've got to say something at the end.
You want to say that?
Yeah, it's a hard time for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, I know. I just want to mention him, you know, because some people are out there going through some really tough times, you know, and to see the London Stadium shut like it is. It's not a laughing.
I thought he was being so sincere.
I am. This is not a laughing matter. Okay, they're really. Right. I mean, they're having a great season, and you know, there's a great friend of mine called John Parsons. He drives a white pimp taxi with plastic flowers in the back.
Does he have vanity plates?
He has vanity plates. He bleaches his, what hair he's got, he does bleach it, I'm pretty sure. But the problem is that before the stadium shut down, he had a great business outside the London Stadium selling Lucky Ever. And if it was a Sunday match, he'd do clothes pegs as well. So, you know, let's, if you see John out there with his white pimp mobile, just give him a toot and say, you know, thumbs up. We're all behind you, John. We love you.
We do love you. What about a GoFund page? Something like that? Could we not?
GoFund, but I don't think you can spell it.
We got 4 minutes.
Right, let's knock a couple of these out double quick. Right, a cabbie nicks a job off you. How do you react?
Show me your arms.
Chasing.
Chasing. Right, that's exactly the answer we didn't want. Yeah. The answer we was looking for is politely remind him that's not how he's done. Do you holler and scream?
I bite the steering wheel.
Yeah.
I scream to myself.
Yeah.
And to Odin. And then I make him an enemy for life.
I know. I'm not going to name a name, right? But I know someone who writes down number plates and keeps it as like. So if he ever sees him, which he never will. That he will go overtake him or something like
no,
that.
No, but quickly before we end, when I first got out, I didn't know there was a feeder rank to Charing Cross Station.
Right.
And yeah. I'd only been out from the prison for about a week. And so I was used to people hollering and screaming at me and just laughing. And so this fella, you could recognise him if I mentioned him from his appearance, comes at me at Charing Cross Station because I jumped straight on the rank, round by the concrete thing there. So I've gone round there. What are you doing? There's people waiting here. And I'm laughing at him. And I put my hands on his shoulder and went, you need to take a chill out pill, man. Like that. Laughed at him because I've been used to inmates screaming at me. So, and he's screaming even more. I just got in my cab. And then I drove. I said, why is he screaming at me? All I did was jump on the rank. Then someone told me later on there's a feeder rank. And I jumped on it by mistake. So you've got to realise some of these fellas are new cab drivers. They don't understand the feeder rank.
Yeah, no,
they don't
squirt. Like,
it's
so honest. They're taking that there bad day on you,
So, yeah, go on, what's your question?
Right, we'll move on to another one. Right, have you ever took a fare to the wrong place, then blame them that it was their fault, told them they gave them the wrong address, even though you knew it was your own fault?
That's a good question.
No, but I've misheard.
We've all done that.
Great Pulteney Street it was, and I thought we said Great Portland Street.
Easily done. But the idiot didn't.
I'm driving up Regent Street, and he could have said something, couldn't he? You know. But so that was the only time.
I had it once. Mate, quick as you can, get me to Farringdon. I went Farringdon. He went Farringdon. Drove in. We got there, and he went, "This ain't Paddington."
I do find the older I get, I'm sort of. Where am I going again?
Yeah,
I get that more.
What would it be like when you go back out after the pandemic?
I'll be like that at the beginning of the affair. Where am I going?
Jeez, mate. Do you ever do that thing where you're driving along and you just zone out and then you come back to yourself and you go, where am I?
Where am I?
Where am I going?
I've done that.
Oh, there's someone in the cab.
I have done that, yeah.
There's someone in the cab. Mate, where are we going?
Yeah, honestly. And it takes me about 4 hours. I have to look for a landmark to realise where I am.
Yeah, I have done that.
And then I have to replay back in my, where did they want to go? Yes, got it.
You might be working too much, Al.
Maybe.
We must have one more question now.
Yep, yeah, alright, so I get one more. Blah, blah, blah. Have you, this is one I specifically put in for you, have you ever had road rage with a fare on board?
Yes.
Yeah.
And apologised.
Yes. Go on, quick scenario, what happened?
Just driving down Henrietta Street and bloke walks out in front of me, I was driving slow, hits me cab, hits it with his hand, shouts and screams at me. And I offer him to have a quiet discussion
on
each other, and he backed away. And so,
that's a surprise.
and then I apologised to the lady, and then I knocked about £4 or £5 off her fare. I felt terrible about it. So, if I ever do that, I always knock something off the fare.
None of us are perfect. I had done it once on Chalk Farm Road, and I had a screaming row with someone because I went to do a U turn, and they done that thing, you know, when they go in the wrong lane to get round you.
Where's Chalk Farm Road?
London somewhere. Anyway, that happened and I lost it. It was one of them days, everything got on top, and I completely forgot I had someone in the back, and they looked mortified, and I had to give them the fare for free.
Yeah, I've done that. Yeah.
Right, we got to wrap this up. Buddy, are you recalling him a dirty dog?
No. You know what? I think we should leave it unanswered and have him back, and we'll clarify.
You ain't proved yourself yet.
I'll tell you what, we'll have him back because he's got more stories, and we've only done one job. We've done it. The prison service is all we really scratch the service on.
Yeah,
we've got the topless waiter.
Topless waiter.
Topless waiter. Yeah. We've got the door work he's done. Anything else? He's been a film extra, so we'll hear all about that. Yeah. But he's got loads.
We okay with a part two?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. All right. You've been listening to George. What a guest this week, eh? Unbelievable. A lot more to come. But if you fancy having a go, maybe you've got a story to tell, then get in touch. You can contact us at newcabglass@gmail.com. All that's left for us to say is have a good week. Until next week. Now, the wrestling guy used to say that, didn't he? I kept thinking, I always say have a good time till next time, and then I think, didn't Kent Morton on British wrestling a few years ago say have a good week?
You always cut
yourself
out anyway.
I do, yeah.
Are we done? Are we wrapped?
Yeah, we're done.
That was superb.
God bless you.